What do you consider all day betting? Like, give me hours, give me times.
Okay.
What time to what time
is considered? So, yes. I'm going to go to bed with my phone on 100%. It's going to be on through the night. Okay.
Not going to charge overnight.
No. Okay. It's going to charge. I'm going to go to bed with it on 100%. It's not charging. So it's going to lose 4 or 5% in the course of the night, depending on which phone it is. Something like the Ultra will lose 4 or 5% in the course of the night. I will wake up, let's say, from about 7:30. The phone is now binging. Things are coming in. Mail's being checked.
I asked you for times.
Yeah, no. I'm thinking so. Then I put in a normal working day. In the course of that working day, I will listen to 2 or 3 hours of audio. So, I mean, I suppose listening to podcasts is not really screen on time. So that's pretty efficient. But I will expect to go to bed with, well, here's an example. So I went to bed with the 8.3 on full. It's now on 20%. But I've got the 5G shit turned on this, even though there is no 5G. I should have turned the 5G off. This is on 21%. And it's now 9:30. So I don't know. That's about normal for these super phones with the big screens and the high tech stuff. If I was using like one of my cheapies, I'd expect it to be at about 50% now, to be honest. That's okay. Just how they run, you know. So okay. I don't know what your expectations are, but I think.
So I charge overnight. I come off my charger.
At 100%.
At 100%. That will be at like 6 in the morning. 5:30, right. 6 in the morning, right?
Okay.
I need to make it to 8 p.m. With 15% in the tank, and I'll be like, that is all day battery life. Right.
Hang on. You need to make it to when? 8 p.m.
8 p.m.
With 15%. Yeah. Jeez, what the hell do you do all day with your phone, bro? You're abusing your phone. I think it's a screen on thing. Do you play? Do you game? Do you game a little bit?
No.
Do you
game
a little bit every day? No. Okay.
No.
But that's screen. See, screen on time is what's screwing you, because I don't do screen on time. I do like, you know, multimedia, but I'm listening and I'm not looking, viewing. So I guess that saves me a lot. If I did 2 to 3 hours of looking at the phone, playing a game or something, that would also throw me out. So get to 8 p.m. with 15%. Jeez, dude.
Anything above 6.5 hours of screen on time,
yeah,
I consider excellent endurance.
Right. Okay.
Anything
yes. Okay.
Below sure. 6 hours, I'll be like, on a high end phone, that is not good enough.
Okay.
And that is a great way to start episode 150 of the Overclocked Saturday podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Lindsay Shooters, Sharpshooters on social media, that opinion guy on the internet. Gavin Dudley is the editor of Tech Magazine, the largest consumer technology publication on the continent. And he sometimes writes products for Tech Radar, the South African edition.
I'm doing good. It's great to see you. We've had a couple of sessions together, the last 3 or 4 we've had in Meet Space, and now we're back on Skype just because of that's how it rolled, you know.
I would say Meet Space, it's my trigger word, because Google Meet and G Suite are not my favorite things to work on. Sorry for boring you about our definition of all-day battery life earlier. I am going to switch directly into the riveting conversation. That is how Gavin feels that Tito Mboweni kneecapped venture capital in South Africa in his budget speech last week.
I kind of overstated the issue a little bit. I think they kind of went a little bit too far in the first place with allowing random venture capitalists to invest random monies in random businesses.
Qualifying businesses.
Well, yeah, but I think a lot of it ended up being almost a kind of tax dodge. So, you know, if Naspers makes available R1 billion slush fund to invest in companies, that's not philanthropy per se. It's business, but that's fine. But I think they get tax credits for those kind of investments. Yes. I see they're trying to do the same thing in the UK now. They've got like a couple of £100 million that they want to invest in startups, so that the government can maybe uplift its tech sector so that America doesn't completely dominate. The UK now has suddenly at this stage decided, oh my goodness, we need some more innovation. So it's putting money into this. But now what's happened with Tito is that he's seeing large corporations moving money around, almost semi-laundering the money in some respects, getting credit for it, but actually they're not being constructive with the money. So the money is just going down a hole. It's written off as a loss, and it's not really uplifting businesses at all. So I can't explain in any detail, because I don't know enough about tax. I can't explain in detail how the venture capital model is being changed. But what I understand from experts is that it's now much harder for venture capitalists to invest in startup businesses. And I mean, I don't know, do you think that's a good or bad thing, Lindsay? I mean,
it's called Section 12J, and it had a sunset clause that would have expired this year anyway. And the government or Tito did not think it wise to renew or extend it, because the proviso was, or at least the idea was, that these companies would invest into like high risk SMMEs. And when those risks pay off, it will create tons of jobs and elevate like mad sectors and make us into this venture capitalist freaking unicorn market. And that didn't happen, because they were saying that 61% of all money invested, the Treasury did investigate, ended up in very low risk, high reward, high financial reward businesses. So they were like, y'all aren't providing the jobs that y'all said. And now the VCs are going, but it takes a long time for these investments to pay off. And the weirdest thing was a lot of these guys were double dipping, where they were putting it into property startups. So like these gentrification projects where they'll put like a co-working space and like a PC lab and like a coffee shop and stuff in this one business. And it's actually just property development. It's not a startup.
It's not innovation at all. Yeah.
What is it called? WeWork. It's like WeWorks that we're setting up.
That's kind of money laundering. Double dipping, as you say. Yeah.
And then the property developers also get tax breaks.
which has extended
for another year. So this was a sunset clause. The sun has now set upon it. And I side with Tito on this one. I know we're not really supposed to pick sides, but this is my show, our show.
So I can
choose a side if I want. I'm firmly on the side of people here, and that those kind of incentives should be funneled somewhere else.
Okay. Now, I'm aware that this is only tangentially connected to tech. It's more maybe a broader definition of tech as innovation. So really what we need is some kind of innovation. There's been very, very little innovation to come out of Africa and South Africa generally. This is one of my main bugbears. But, you know, you can't expect innovation to just come out of nowhere. It's actually innovation is just the end result of a whole system of encouraging entrepreneurship, encouraging STEM subjects and all sorts of other things. You know, I think we're trying to deal with the end product here without having addressed the cause of why we have such a poor startup environment in South Africa. But maybe we should move on, because that was
I just have two things to add.
News.
Well, it's still kind of pretty relevant. The fallout is only kind of happening now. The first thing is Elon Musk's mother posted his aptitude test on Twitter. His program, a computer programming aptitude test, and he scored off the charts. And it was like one of those very sweet things where she's like, this is why you were a great engineer. So there was great innovation that came out of South Africa, just went to other shores. The same like with LifeQ, who were at one stage the darling of the fitness tracker market. So
They pioneered all that stuff. They pioneered all the sensors that go into watches and things.
They were kind of first on the SpO2 sensor as well, using the different colored bulbs there as well. And they now operate, they were incubated in Stellenbosch, but now they operate out of Switzerland, which is very sad. So the downside of all this government budget speech stuff is that we are going to see a lot more tech startups go elsewhere to more startup-friendly markets where they can access VC funding easier, and that is sad. But moving on to other things that are sad, Gavin, things that won't work, startup things coming from major corporations. Microsoft Ignite, which is their big, this is the future of our company kind of presentation, two-day presentations. They debuted AR Mesh, which I saw this brilliant headline where it was like, AR Mesh seems a lot like Pocket PC to me. I can't remember where I read the headline, But that just hit the nail on the head with my thinking. It's like Pokemon Go, but with a HoloLens on your face. And so they made it look cool in the presentation because you could see the Pokemon characters.
Yeah.
The Pokemon. And the guy throwing the ball. But in real life, you can't see that. Other people can't see that. It's just that dude who can see that. And now he's got this goofy looking headset on that costs like $3,000, I think. Gavin.
Yeah, but I mean, does it matter if no one's there like observing him? So what actually happened with the Microsoft thing is they sent out their new headset to a couple of different people and then had a meeting where they all met together virtually, where they saw virtual instances of each other all in the same room together. So even though they were in all different parts of the world, all the people attending the meeting were in the same room as each of them. And then they had objects.
Walk around Haiti like that?
I don't know. But then they all had objects which they could manipulate, and they could actually manipulate each other's objects. So they could, you know, pass virtual objects to each other and stuff. So, I mean, the point is, this is all, you know, virtual reality version one. We're still kind of in virtual reality version one. And Lindsay's quite quick to run the stuff down. But in the first place, it's quite amazing when you get into it. We are busy reviewing the Oculus, which one is it called now?
Quest.
Yeah, the Quest 2, which is truly amazing. I have to say there are no cables. You don't plug it into anything. Okay. It's just connects with Wi-Fi to the system. It streams games if you want that. The visuals are just so far ahead of the last VR stuff I tested. I played with a few of my highly experienced geek friends who've done VR over time. They told me they were blown away with what happened. Now, for them to be blown away, things have to be pretty impressive. So I guess what I'm saying is Microsoft's barking up one tree. Oculus is barking up another tree. People are developing VR, AR, and mixed reality, MR, in all different kind of situations. And they're now trying to call it XR, X being just the factor for all kinds of alternate realities, AR, VR, and MR. We're calling it XR as a collective term. And what's actually going on is they're all trying to make a business case so doctors can use it to practice surgery. Schools can use it for X, Y, Z. Gamers can use it for ABC, mainly because they need to go on developing the product. But to do that, they have to present a business case of some kind to someone, somewhere, somehow, in order to get money to go on work pushing it forward so that it ends up as Minority Report. You know, not there today. We'll see that in our lifetime. But in order to move this technology ahead, they have to show use cases today to the Lindsay Shooters of the world. Yeah. Okay, the rest of us just believe.
I've had a HoloLens strapped to my face on 7 separate occasions in my life.
That's pretty good.
None of those use cases had any practical benefit or were enjoyable. I've had a VR situation strapped to my forehead. About 12 times in my life.
All right.
And like I've walked it from the old school Oculus dev kits that made you want to puke while walking through Minecraft type world to like not the the previous Quest, not the Quest 2. When they first went wireless, when Oculus first went wireless, or what was
the Quest? The Go. Was it Go?
No, it was the HTC Vive.
Like
the first big like wireless one. It messes with your eyes. It does.
Sure.
It literally does. Every time something is trying to trick your brain into doing something, or visualizing something, it's messing with your eyes. TV that tricks your brain into thinking that you're seeing depth, that is messing with your eyes. The human sight is not meant to work. So it not only is it damaging your actual senses, it is also just I don't like these disconnected experiences, man. I want people to gather around and have a good time together and not in a virtual space.
They're practical things. I mean, you know, people who've lost the use of their legs can you know, have experiences they otherwise wouldn't. I mean, there's a great thing that I'm actually going to test with this new Oculus now, of a guy climbing, what's it, El Capitan or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, and you, it's from his point of view. So he's not being filmed. He is filming, you know, as he climbs, which apparently is quite hectic, because obviously you can look up and look around as you're climbing, which is pretty cool.
And then?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. I don't know if I'll be interested in climbing El Capitan.
I've flown in hot air balloons over Turkey, done all amazing things. And
my
brother-in-law. You're not actually physically doing it.
Yeah, my brother-in-law was riding a roller coaster with dinosaurs. Okay, so these dinosaurs are running alongside him while he's in the roller coaster. And then your roller coaster rides between the dinosaur's legs, and he's like freaking out, because while he's doing that, he's having to shoot things at the same time while he's riding. So, I mean, the entertainment value I got just out of watching him enjoying this was enormous. So, you know, I don't know. The point is, I think we're trying to find applications for this. I think the prospect of us living in a kind of a much more virtualized reality is very real. Unfortunately, we're not going to see it in our lifetime, but I do think that these science fiction ideas of where we live a part of our lives in a completely virtual way, I think is going to be very real, for, even for our children's generation, frankly. Meetings with people who are not really there and so on, you know. Mm.
I know, but yeah, it just, I prefer the human in-person experience. But that moves me on to, there's another Alert Everyone When You're in Trouble app that is launching, has launched.
Yeah.
What's up with Trigger?
I don't even know whether we should be caring or getting excited. I mean, the thing is just launching now. So Trigger is yet another app which will call medical, armed response, paramedics, roadside assistance, legal advice, trauma counseling, you know, all sorts of help by pressing a button on the phone. So I don't know if we need one more of these, unless the previous ones didn't work out especially well.
So I launched one for Apple devices. That's free, right?
Right. Then how can they afford to do that, though?
I don't know. Maybe they managed to zero rate it with their network partners in exchange for, like, cheap iPhones. I don't know, dude.
Okay. So the point is, you can summon this help, but you're still going to end up paying for the help. Sorry to say that again?
That was speculation.
Okay.
That was not the factual. That was me being facetious, and I apologize to iStore. So, love you guys.
So Trigger is a locally made app that allows you to summon all these kinds of help and support emergency services. But I'm assuming that though the app is free, you are still paying for the service. So if you call the paramedics, presumably you're still going to have to pay those paramedics, whether it's on the day or later, right? It's not like they're providing free services through a free app.
Mm. Yeah, I prefer to have these things kind of bolted onto my medical insurance.
In a world
where you can see the tentacles of the National Health Service reaching out across the country. And after the pandemic has really opened my eyes to the role of, or at least the value in a kind of universal health system.
Okay.
I think having kind of the trauma response on call privatized like this will put money into the what are they called? The red and blue people. 911.
Ambulance
services.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You have like Metro, which is like the state one, and then you have like all privatized guys. It will put money into them. And as long as we're taking care, making sure that our first responders have financial security going forward and job security, I am happy. So yes, please.
We're getting a little off topic there again. So Trigger is a new app. It hasn't even really been fully launched. It only came out today. So it's not like anyone's tested it or can give you any background on how it works or what the results will be. It's just something to note. Trigger, yet another app to call emergency services. Try it, see if it works for you. Yeah. Okay.
Talking about other apps and services, Uber now accounts for 75% of ride hailing in South Africa. So Rixi taxis and those kind of things are dying on the vine. And Uber, well, they weren't on the Vine. They weren't.
Do we care? Do we care if a more efficient system like Uber is wiping out the old taxi system? Do we care?
I don't know.
We're hectic Uber users. So obviously, like, we're voting with our feet in favor of Uber. Yeah. But
I really want to care. But I once had an episode in at Cape Town International Airport where I was arriving home on a flight. My Uber was on the way. I dipped into the Woolies to get like a ginger and orange shot or something like that, and a bottle of water. And this taxi driver, the car taxi people, was harassing me from arrivals. He followed me into the Woolworths to try and convince
that's
me.
That's too much, man. That's like
he
too
was
much.
Charging Uber prices. And I eventually got so upset that I was looking at security and I was like, what are you not going to do anything?
Do something.
I turned to this guy and I was like, dude, I don't care about your prices. Like, you could take me home for 20 Rand and I still won't. The moment you can develop a system that can track in real time using like Google Maps or something, can securely store my credit card details, and that you are reachable at any time.
With me, and it's quality controlled.
And
the service is quality, roughly quality controlled. Yeah.
Then I will gladly go with you. But until you can do that, my Uber is arriving. So
So technology did just pull the middle out of that business, but that business was what was ripe for disruption anyway. It was wildly inefficient. Taxis hanging around at places where people might be, you know, they could, you see taxis parked outside hotels. They sit there for hours and hours and hours waiting for that one ride, you know, that they're going to do in the next 2 hours. That's not efficient. I mean, your asset is just sitting there for 2 hours. Then you basically have to text the person who you're giving a ride for the 2 hours you've been snoring in your car, you know. So, yeah, okay. So, but how do we feel about Uber drivers getting the rights of employees? Are we in favor or not?
I'm in favor of it, but not fully. I like the idea that Uber was founded on, where it's like you are making a trip in your private car. You are commuting to town, like the CBD. And on your commute, you can earn some bucks because there's someone in your neighborhood that also wants to get to the CBD at the same time.
Yeah, so that is what sharing.
Ride sharing was supposed to be.
Right.
And then it got bastardized and thingied by, like, there's these agencies now that employ, that buy up fleets of cars and then employ drivers and pay them a pittance. Yes.
I had no idea that was going on, really. So they're using the, but how do they capture Uber money? I mean, surely the drivers are registered as drivers and the drivers' bank accounts are getting filled by Uber.
So you can, and then you can employ someone else who is Uber certified. So like you, your second car, like you could put your kid to work as an Uber driver and you can pocket the cash and give him what you want. So this is effectively what the
Is that true all over the world? Can that be done anywhere? Or is that just a South African case?
I think it's kind of unique to South Africa.
Because that's going to completely screw up the system, because the taxi bosses are clearly going to see that as a more luxurious model of the minibus system that they've got now. They can just move into different markets.
I like the French system, which almost backfired on me once. We were at this restaurant at an event in the shadow of the Eiffel Tower, and we came out and we ordered an Uber. We hailed an Uber, and the one that came was too small because we don't speak French or read French, and so we had to get another one. So in France, I'll get to my point. It's 10 euro just to call the thing out,
right?
And then you can ask your ride.
Right. Okay. Interesting.
I remember
but that's
like
good when it stops jerking people around. Yeah.
Sort of thing. And now they've won the class action lawsuits in the States. They won in the UK, and they've launched one in South Africa that is being aided by the UK lawyers who won that case. So we might see them being made full-time employees. But talking about things that are now changing the way it is operating, I just need to read you this. Huawei is saying that Harmony OS isn't an Android clone. It's just a version of AOSP, which is the Android Open Source Project. And
right.
the tech nerds who are saying that it's just an Android clone don't understand what open source means. Gavin, just on those words, give me some commentary.
Well, I mean, Android itself is built on other open source software. It's built on Linux and a whole lot of other open source softwares. So, I mean, I can see that, I can see where Huawei's coming from. Okay. The problem is that they've used a whole lot of raw programming material, which was molded into the shape of Android. That's what they're using, but they're claiming that it's obviously based on the thing that came before Android, which is Linux and other programming languages. So it's tricky. I mean, I can see the case they're making. The truth is, it's like them arguing that their phone is not like an iPhone when it really yes. looks and smells like an iPhone, yes. you know? So, yes. I mean, but I can see their point. I can see their point is that lots of people are benefiting from the source code of Android in different ways, you know? And why shouldn't they? You know, I hope that over time, their fork of Android will fork off a whole lot more. They will add more and more stuff into it that makes it less and less like Android. Who knows? You know, maybe they'll achieve that.
These are things. I'm going to leave the link to this. It's one of those Huawei fan sites. What's it called? Huawei Central. Like Windows Central, kind of.
Probably funded by Huawei.
It was just the funniest thing how this executive, Huawei executive, was kind of talking himself in knots, trying to explain what AOSP is. And it's like translated from Chinese.
Lovely.
Really like bad English. But for me, my word on it, my read is when they launched Harmony OS, they spoke a big game of like the compiling, how it compiles.
They did basically lead us to believe it would be a completely unique product that they were making. It would be a unique operating system with new features and all sorts of things.
That would be fully compatible with existing Android architecture so that the apps could it over easily. And now you're kind of backtracking and now you're telling me that I don't understand how open source works. Awesome guy. Do you? Samsung still stole their homework because the S21 Ultra and the Huawei P40 Pro Plus are very similar. That definitely came out of the same vest.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, my broad picture is that we definitely need some more diversity in the operating system world. I mean, there was a time when Apple's operating system for their Mac computers, Mac OS and Windows were just about the only things around. There were some server operating systems and one or two exotic others that all had like 1% of the market, like Linux and so on.
Ubuntu.
Yeah, Ubuntu Linux. But, you know, the fact that Windows was like 85 and at times 90% of the market was good for the growth of the PC market, because it meant you only had to develop printer drivers for one operating system. You only had to develop software for one operating system. So if you were making Photoshop, you know, you would make it for Mac and for Windows. You wouldn't have to make it for four other kinds of operating systems as well, which would quadruple your costs. So that helped the PC industry mushroom and explode and get really big really quickly. But it also meant that Windows became a weakness and a point of failure in that a security flaw exposed in this one thing would expose 90% of computers in the world. So, you know, these are the kind of problems that humanity has struggled with, even at a biological level. You don't want your environment to be too homogenous. So now, unfortunately, we're looking down the barrel of a similar thing where the world is being roughly split in operating system. Let's say it's probably about 80% Android, 20% iPhone. I'm actually not sure at this point. You know, but again, it's like we need, I feel, more players. And I was hoping Huawei would be that third player. Now it doesn't look like it anymore. Or maybe they'll still be
LG.
Yeah.
Neither does LG. I see you have an ode to the G2, which was the last phone you truly loved.
Yeah. I've been having a difficult experience with a piece of LG kit. I bought a gaming monitor for one of my children. And it started developing flickering problems. So I take it all the way to Stickland. Stickland is like nearly an hour and a half away from where I live. So it's like the other end of the world. I have to drive it there. And they tell me, well, you know, monitors only consist of three things: the power supply, the circuit board on the back, and the panel, which is the actual screen in the front. There are only three things that make up a monitor. And I'm like, okay, that's great. Can you just fix this thing, please? Yeah, okay, we're going to replace these things. Call me up. I drive all the way back out to Stickland, another hour and a half. That's one way, by the way. It's an hour and a half one way. Okay.
We could have actually come to visit me. We could have recorded.
Yeah, I gathered I was pretty close. Yeah, yeah. So they show me my repaired monitor, and I say, listen, man, I live really far away. Do you mind if you just plug this in so I can verify? Sure as shit. Still broken. Okay. They plug it in. It works fine for the first like minute, and then the flickering starts again. And I'm like, what did you guys do? They say, well, we replaced the circuit board and we replaced the power supply, which are two of the three things in the monitor, and it's still happening. So clearly we'd have to now replace the panel. I'm like, oh my God.
Then but you'll just have a new monitor.
Yeah, they it was so much cheaper for everyone to just send me this thing. So I don't want to put down LG's products, but the service end of it has not been a great experience for me. I could imagine it could be much worse. They could be refusing to help me, blah, blah, blah.
I had a very similar incident with the AOC portable USB monitor.
Oh, where, I remember you got that quite recently, though, like a month ago.
Yeah. And I took it back the very next day because I got home, plugged it in, and it did the flicker thing. It like it wasn't getting enough power, plugged it into the PC, plugged it into the USB 3.0 port, and plugged that thing into a separate power adapter because it has a USB splitter cable.
Well, for those who don't understand what he's talking about, this is quite an interesting thing that Lindsay stumbled on. It's a standalone, fairly small kind of monitor that you can carry around with you, but it means you can plug your other devices into it so you can have a big screen experience. It's effectively a portable monitor, is exactly what it is. How big was yours?
15 inches.
Damn, okay. And what were you planning to plug into it?
I was hoping to run DeX on it. I was hoping that the S21
DeX would be plugging in your Samsung phone, which runs a virtual operating system on that monitor. Okay.
Yeah, I was hoping that was push enough power, but didn't. Then plugged it into the PC or at least the laptop, which is the way it's supposed to be used. As like
it should then become an extension of your laptop monitor. It becomes a secondary monitor.
Yeah. 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 And downloaded the drivers and like another screen app thing, and the thing just flickered, like it just flickers on and off, on and off. And
this has
like
definitely got to do with how it draws power. I mean, powering a 15-inch screen is considerable amounts of power. Hey, I mean, that's like
I don't know. I think if I'd spent up, paid almost double the price for the ASUS version, with USB-C,
it would have this problem.
I probably wouldn't have had that problem. But moving on, Gavin, you have a thing here, a how-to.
Yes.
Identify music with listening apps. And before, like, I used to use SoundHound like a demon. I used to be a SoundHound freak. I used to hate Shazam. And then Apple and Google built these services directly into their assistants, into Siri and into Google Assistant.
So well, you can just I believe actually acquired Shazam, so I think that's how they did it. Yeah.
And then they license it out as well. So Samsung, if you have a current Samsung phone running One UI 3.0, in your quick notification toggles, there is a Shazam one that you can actually put on there. It comes preloaded.
Hang on, this is on a Samsung phone, you said?
Yeah.
So here's your situation. For those who've never used these things, these apps are designed to match the sound wave it can hear, the music it can hear, to a database of sound waves it knows, which is an enormous database of sound waves of every song ever made, every piece of music ever made. So it will be able to recognize a tune and tell you the name of the song by simply holding up the phone. So so Shazam, you say, is now available on different products. You can also just download it and use it. Is that right? But it comes, you say, pre-installed on some things. SoundHound, I think it's still a very good, incredible product, but I think it's still an independent product, right? But
there's a subscription model now. I don't know what the subscription gets you, but they have a subscription model.
Are you saying that Google's Assistant also has this built in? So I can actually ask Google Assistant what song is playing?
Yes.
Aha. Never used
it. Never came to South Africa. I think it was like 2 years, Google I/O. They like announced it the 1 year, and the next year it was like, oh, we've added extra AI smarts to it and everything.
Okay.
And now
it's a radical extension of our tip. So, I mean, I think most people have heard of Shazam and know how it works, but did you know that your assistant can do it for you now? So you can go, hey, Google, what song is playing? Hey, Siri, what song is playing? They will do it automatically. But I think the
interesting thing. Sorry for setting off your devices.
Oh, right. Yeah, I'm not supposed to do that. Sorry. The interesting bit about this particular how-to, though, is that you can now also use those apps to put in a line of lyrics. So if you know, you know, the answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind or something like that, you can put that in and it will figure out the song for you. I've actually tried this before and it's actually remarkably good. You really don't think that based on the half a bar of music and you have in your head, they'll find the song. And it does. It's absolutely amazing. Yeah. So
It's like the internet. It's like everything is connected to the central database.
Yeah. But I mean, if you think about what's going on, it has to match. Well, I suppose the text, it can search, you know, a database of lyrics and find a song. But to match a piece of music, apparently you can actually hum the piece of music and it will go and search for the same.
Shazam is big on the humming thing.
Yeah. I mean,
down
it's
in Cape Town, we have a radio station called KFM. And on Wednesdays during their afternoon drive show, they have a segment called Hum Day. And send in a voice clip humming a song and then they play it for you.
Okay. Are they Shazamming it, presumably? Something like
most
that.
Likely.
Okay. All right.
Everyone always thinks, oh, just because the radio jock or the producers have such encyclopedic music knowledge. using Shazam. AI and stuff. Gavin, in closing, Google was down for a little bit today. About 2 hours ago. Probably for about half an hour to an hour. It was down. Google, YouTube was down, Gmail, everything.
Okay.
But the funniest thing was 20 minutes before it happened, Google announced that they were doing an Apple and they were going to put an end to ad tracking or targeted ads across their services. So my thing is, if Google went down, all of Google services went down directly after they made this announcement.
Yeah.
Is Google just a targeted advertising? Oh, goodness.
What was that?
That was Google.
Oh, okay.
The robots have ears, Gavin. Is it just an ad tracking platform?
No, but it is. We know that that's what it is. Search was just the crack cocaine that it had to give you to pull you in, you know?
Yeah.
And now you're in, and now it's kind of mining everything you're doing. Absolutely. And I think targeted ads are a reality. I think they're going to be with us until websites and app developers find other ways to make money. I'm one of those people who is up for paying for my online content. Obviously, reasonable amounts, you know, pay for online content rather than have to deal with all these ad issues. So if the people who produce quality content want to charge me for that quality content, I would more likely go that way than deal with all the damn ads. Yeah. So I don't know. People have speculated for years that that's Google's biggest vulnerability, is that even after all this time, after everything it's built, after all the products, it still derives like close to 90% of its income from bloody ads. You know, even after all this time, it has been unable to move away from that. So, So I didn't get that announcement that it wants to move away from tracking
ads. Yeah, it was big news like a couple of hours ago, maybe 2 hours ago.
It's a huge deal, potentially huge deal.
Yeah. Gavin, talking about content creators who are developing quality content and hope you would pay for it at some stage, there's still another month left to grab a circuit board subscription, which is my weekly newsletter for free. I'm going to start monetizing it very soon. I'm going to run two newsletters a week. And tomorrow, I am talking about how private you are when you are online. Because I found some juicy little research papers and stuff and trying to distill that as we speak. And that's circuitboard.substack.com. I'll link it down in the podcast description at circuitboard. That's B-O-R-E-D. And you can find me on thatopinionguy.co.za is where I say things that I can't say and expect money for it. The YouTube's running That Opinion Guy, and Sharpshooters is where you find me on the Twitters, and That Opinion Guy on Instagram. Gavin, where can people find you and what's your story?
First of all, can I just say I've really been enjoying my circuit board newsletter. If you're doing one about privacy and related things, I'll put in a personal request. Maybe you'll get to it, maybe you won't. Will you please find out whether Windows now does have a built-in VPN. Is it some editions of Windows, some not? Do you have to turn it on? Do you have to download it and install it? Maybe you could just clarify that in a sentence or two in your newsletter. Mm-hmm. I think people would find that very valuable because everyone talks about the VPN they're using. Nobody really understands if they should go out and get one. Must they get a free one? Must they get a cheap one? You know, maybe you can tell us what Windows is doing about it.
Cool.
I am still working on my roundup of budget phones. The newest addition to my lineup is going to be the LG K61. I don't know, you know, we kind of overlooked LG just because they've been talking a big game about their top-end phones. I've overlooked their mid-range phones. So I'm adding that to my lineup. That's going into Tech Magazine, but it will also be going into Tech Radar in a different form. These are all phones below 6,000 Rand is my target. I've taken a lot of photos with each one of them, like set up photos. And I'd like you actually, Lindsay, to look through the photos and do a blind test for which photo you think is which phone. Okay. Cool. That's what I'm up to. And then I've got a whole lot of TVs inbound. Now, TVs are a real bloody problem because most homes don't have space for more than one TV at a time. So I have to stagger them so they, as one goes away, another one arrives. And if one arrives while one is still here, then the house just turns into chaos. But I'm not a big fan of doing TVs because reasons. Okay, but I'm going to try and take on TVs below 10,000 Rand and help you find the best one because that's where I think the sweet spot is. So that's my new big project that I'm working on. And that's it from me. Please send us mail to overclockedza, all one word, overclockedza@gmail.com. Tell us what you want us to talk about. All right.
Gavin, just one note on TVs. Samsung had a big TV spectacular announcement yesterday. And yeah, curiously, FreeSync is on there for AMD, but no high refresh rate TVs. So yeah. High refresh rate clearly not a thing.
It's like the curved TVs and the 3D TVs of like a few years ago. You know, it's just like pure hype and like ways AR to get you mesh. To buy stuff.
It's the AR mesh.
The difference is that the AR mesh is complete vaporware for most people. Okay, AR mesh. All righty.